All right, this is going to be part five of a May 2025 conversation with Landis Arnold in Tabern Ash, Colorado. Today is actually May 3rd, and Landis, L-A-N-D-I-S, is donating five kayaks and five paddles to the John Wessel Powell Museum in Green River. So Landis, there are five paddles here. What can you tell us about these paddles?
Well, get them straight. So two paddles came from Stephen Bradley's daughter, Kitty. But they're Stephen Bradley built paddles, and I figured they'd be a great match for the Steve Bradley built boats. Looking at them, they appear to be about a 210 to 215 length. Paddles in my life have been referred to in metric measurements, though I'm sure when he built these, he was thinking in inches and feet. But the technology, these are both built probably in the late 40s or 1950s. They're aluminum extruded shafts, in which he splined a cut into and then put a sheet of plywood, bolted them together, and used them as kayaking. One's a little more used. They both had fiberglass edges on them. This had a full perimeter fiberglass, and this one had a fiberglass tip on it. The varnish that was used has gone away on one more than the other. But what's cool is there was no template on how paddles should look, but they needed to work, and this was a good working method that he could do on his own.
So to identify these two paddles, the center of the shaft, center of the paddle, has about a foot to maybe a foot and a half of just regular aluminum, and then on either side of that is a black tape. Where your hands would be, paddling.
That's a shrink wrap.
Okay.
And one of the paddles he actually reinforced with fiberglass in the grip area. I think that's because he had a large hand.
Okay.
But it's also to give, you can feel it gets smaller in the middle.
Which makes sense. If you have a bigger hand, then you want a bigger grip.
And these are made at, I'm going to say almost 90 degrees. Actually, let's say 90 degrees. It's actually slightly more. It's 92-ish.
Okay.
And they're flat in profile.
Okay.
So yeah. The flatness in profile is the big differential to the other ones. And there were other flat profile paddles. I've got one from the 70s, an Iliad paddle.
So Landis, you mentioned the shrink wrap here, the black shrink wrap either side of the regular aluminum tubing. Now that wouldn't have been 1940s, 50s. The shrink wrap would have been added on later, do you think?
No, it would have been added on at the time before the blade was built, because it has to slide over the sleeve. So
shrink wrap was something that they
would
have had.
Shrink wrap, I think, was happening. Okay. Plastics really started up in the 30s and 40s, the world after the war, plastics were like
took off.
Yeah. Everything. They were 20 years after it in the graduates, and hey, the future's in plastics.
But they were late. Okay. All right.
And technically, like this paddle here, one of the other paddles also has an aluminum shaft in it. It's got shrink wrap the full length of it.
Got it.
And this was a very, boy, I always wanted one of these. This was a Boulder built paddle with a balsa core. This is Mike O'Brien's paddle. Uh-huh.
So this paddle, the one Mike O'Brien paddle, has a roll of duct tape in the center of the shaft. Now there's two paddles that have a roll of duct tape.
Yeah.
One of them has a yellow blade And this one has more of a honey-colored blade.
Yeah.
And of course it says
O'Brien, M. O'Brien.
M. O'Brien, and there's Mariposa, phone numbers on it, which is very hard to read.
Yeah.
But this will be Michael's paddle. So I see Michael's is different than Steve Bradley's, because this has a cup to it.
Yeah.
The paddle has a curve to it.
Yeah.
When did that come in?
So technically, paddles shaped like this came in. I mean, they were actually being made, I'm sure, back in the 30s and before.
But okay.
It was a more advanced way to make something. So
way more complicated.
This was made over a mold of
okay.
some sort. Whereas this was a sheet of plywood was purchased and cut out.
Right. And way simpler. I mean, I could build this in my backyard. This, no, that's
yeah.
much more.
And this one actually, these ones I think were made by Phil Sokol in Boulder. And I recall that they were putting a balsa core in with a Kevlar and fiberglass skin over it.
Okay.
And so it was a very low swing weight to the paddle.
And this has three rivets at the end of the blade, and those rivets are doing what?
That's holding it together, because okay. it's the tip of the paddle that takes most of the abuse when you're paddling.
It would okay. delaminate.
Yeah, in fact, there's a little bit of delam there.
Happening.
And I don't know if this was preemptive or post, but there was also reinforced here. This is the strain area.
Okay.
And a lot of paddles would break right across this kind of three-quarter height.
Okay.
And just from normal use or from rocks?
Well, from whitewater. You know, people run in whitewater, they're doing things like clinging onto the shoreline, trying to work up an eddy.
Yeah, and you're right.
A kayak paddle really takes one of the highest amounts of force of almost any kind of sports equipment, particularly when it's engaging to the shore. Or something, you know, because it's like your whole propulsion is going through that tip. If it's grabbing on a rock, you know, it's like your fingernails, and you've got this big lever arm pulling a lot of weight.
Right.
And
with your body mass.
So that boat, this paddle, and then I'm changing to another. I'm going to assume these also came from Mike, and my giveaway is the duct tape.
Okay.
So
all right.
Mike and my dad always put duct tape around their shaft as a way to fix things on the river.
Oh, great idea.
Okay, and
yeah.
this is the fix-it roll.
Okay.
And this is a paddle that I'm not sure exactly who built it, but I'm pretty sure it was made in the 70s. I think it was made in California, so... This would have been made by some kind of commercial enterprise where they had a mold and, you know, matched top and bottom that are different shape that were then being mated to the shaft. And this is, I think, a fiberglass shaft. It seems to be a fiberglass shaft, but I'm not...
And that's the yellow bladed? It's
the yellow blade, and then the brown blade is made on the same mold. It's got a different coloring on the shaft.
Right, it has the same tip guard here.
Yeah, there's a tip guard that's built into this that's
right.
similar to the rivets.
Okay.
There's rivets holding the tip guard in place, whereas in this situation, the rivets are holding...
The paddle in place with no tip guard.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And... You can see.
And you think that's one of Mike's paddles as well, the brown one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're the same.
Got it. Oh, I see.
But there's no.
The length is the same. The guards are the same.
There's no tape on it.
No tape.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And this one has been fixed. So it's been repaired here.
This is the brown one we're looking at.
Brown
the brown bladed one.
Yeah.
One of the blades.
And
by the.
The other blade has been.
It's
fixed.
Been strengthened on both areas
okay.
there. Yeah.
And that's Kevlar. So that repair was done. In the later half of the 70s or maybe the early 80s, and here you have a fracture up there. So then you're seeing the force that gets loaded
the top
onto
of the blade.
The
there's a fracture up there.
Okay. And then this paddle, going back to this paddle, I think this was the penultimate paddle for Mike that he And there's one thing that you'll feel is that there's indexing in the grips, okay? So you know if you close your eyes and you're upside down in the river, you know the orientation of your blade.
Based oh, wait a minute, let me make sure I understand this. So
put your hand
in the shaft.
There's indexing on the
there's
white
a way
shaft,
to tell.
Not much on the black.
It's subtle, but you can feel it.
So the shaft is more of an oval here.
Correct.
Where
and
your
that's,
hand is. Where your hand
so
holds the shaft.
So that's in two of the five.
Okay.
There's a little oval in one of Steve's paddles.
Okay.
But not the other.
Right. So when you're upside down trying to roll, you know where your blade is in relationship to the water.
Yeah, based upon that index that should be tied together.
Okay.
And this one was loose.
So this is one of Mike's paddles. It's the one kind of the honey-colored paddle. And Landis has just popped that blade right off of its shaft.
Yeah, it needs to be epoxied back together, but it's for
demonstration
for understanding,
purposes, it's lovely.
You can see how it's made, and it's actually got the core in it.
Okay.
And that index on this hand, if you're going to put this back together, you need to
make
them perpendicular. Okay.
Okay.
So the power of the paddle is perpendicular to the index.
So the paddle would then line up with the small diameter of the oval.
Correct, yeah.
And the long dimension of the oval would be perpendicular to the paddle blade.
Yeah.
Okay.
And back in this era, all of these paddles were basically a 90 degree twist from one blade to the other.
Okay.
I build paddles right now, and the biggest twist I did for anybody last year was 40 degrees.
Wow.
Okay. I personally use 40. My old paddles were 60. But in not that long ago, 25 years ago, I was using 75 and then 85 and then 90. So it's gone down.
Why?
And the way the twist, the concept of a high degree twist is that if you're paddling against the wind, the upper blade is slicing through the wind.
Oh. Ah.
Okay.
So less fatigue on your paddling.
Well, there's less resistance. The problem is you have to twist your wrist more.
More,
You have one control hand.
Yep.
And your high twist, you know, has to go really high, like throwing a baseball. And as that twist spin goes down, there's less that goes. And some people go 0 degree twist, so they're pushing against the wind, but they're not twisting their wrist. They actually have to twist their wrist in reverse, which I think is not a good idea. That's really bad for your wrist.
Yeah.
But
Okay.
Well, no, what I meant by less fatigue is, like when we're rowing, if you have open oarlocks, you can use your wrist to slice the wind and reduce fatigue on yourself.
From that.
Especially if you're going to do an 18-day Grand Canyon trip.
Yeah. So you are slicing in an oarlock.
Yeah. So that's why I don't like fixed oarlocks. I like to be able to pivot my wrist, you know.
You probably use that when you're rowing sometimes too. If you got to get your oar up.
You need to row underneath someone. Yeah. You can keep rowing.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah. And with a kayak paddle, you do similar things. Like if you're doing a brace or a scull, if your paddle gets low in the water, if you try to go straight back up, you're going to go down instead of it going up. But if you twist it, you can slice it up and grab again.
Yeah.
So I've done the opposite before. Right?
And so we've been joined by John Weisite.
Yes.
W-E.
Good morning, everybody.
W-E-I-S-H-E-I-T.
We is he it.
Thank you. I was just working that through my pea brain this morning going, I haven't woke up yet. But welcome, John. This is good.
Far from a pea brain.
All right. So did we cover these paddles?
I think we did. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm gonna terminate this interview, and then we're going to get the next boat out of its wrapping and then do an interview on that.
Okay.
Thank you.